Turning now to Nicola, our reading of Tesla, Man Out of Time, by Margaret Cheney. As we read about Nicola's life after returning from Colorado in 1900, we should consider what it would mean for the power guys of his day, folks like J.P. Morgan and the heads of state Nicola appealed to for support as World War I loomed, support in scaling up his particle beam weapon, that's EMF, in order to put a fast end to conflict through its awe-inspiring, if awful, demonstration of unassailable force. What would go through the minds of those who lust for power untouchable to learn of Nicola's invention? Think of what the current crop would do, and you know what they did. Continuing, chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed. Recall that on September 13th, 1900, Tesla wrote Stanford White, I've not been half as dumbfounded by the news of the shooting of President McKinley, who was shot on September 6th, as I have by the estimate submitted by you, which, together with your kind letter of yesterday, I received last night. One thing is certain, we cannot build that tower as outlined. I cannot tell you how sorry I am, for my calculations show that with such a structure I could reach across the Pacific. For a time, unquote from Nicola, for a time they considered falling back on an older design utilizing two or perhaps three much smaller towers. But eventually a single tower was built that soared to a height of 187 feet. Within it was a deep steel shaft that ran 120 feet down into the earth. This shaft, encased by a timber-lined well 12 feet square and encircled by a spiral stairway, was designed so that air pressure could raise it to touch the tower's top platform. Wardenclyffe was a landmark as magnificent in concept and execution as America's golden age of electrical engineering ever produced. Magnificent and doomed. Because of the inventor's impatience for delivery of his machinery, Westinghouse assigned a special person to expedite it. But the slowness with which Tesla was getting his money from Morgan, and I'm going to interject with perhaps a too long comment, I think we can see the hidden scheming of power here. What do you think? Controlling where money flows controls what work gets done. And this is so obvious. It should be clear to anyone who thinks about this, that we are captives in a technologically sophisticated slave system. Controlling where money flows controls what work gets done and what work doesn't. The global state statesman developed the strategy because it converts us into puppets. In so doing, it can determine who gets stress and who doesn't. Think of the pain that the withdrawal of money formerly assured causes, forcing the victim to face the fact that others determine his or her destiny rather than himself. This is perhaps seen most sharply today in the quote-unquote professional world, whose members are being reminded continuously now that automation threatens their jobs too. We'll be taking a closer look at this issue of structural economic collapse over the next few shows in our readings of Proudhon. And with it, their sense of bigness, loss of income means loss of a sense of competence, that their security exists on sufferance at the discretion of the rulers. To cite one example, the New York Times of January 18, 2017 has an article titled Internal New York Times Report Says Newsroom Must Change at Faster Pace, and that's by Sydney Ember. Journalism overall has been subjected to this economic assault for some time, for reasons many people have discussed, and which I did as well in Waking Up, Freeing Ourselves from Work. Download free from the Waking Up pages and the tools pages of the Nascent's website. And most of us, the PDF, and most of us are well aware of newsrooms were acquired by hedge funds, which then loaded on the debt. Budget crises and bankrupting predictably follow, etc., etc. The tone of this article, however, is distinctly menacing, not only because part of the restructuring plan calls for more visual reporting, and I'll never forget the story that a friend used to school me on the false notion that for elucidating truth, a picture is supposedly worth a thousand words, how an arts center in a dry location found the one tree available on the complex and used it for its promotional materials, and with a single tree managed to make the site look verdant and green, enticing when it was anything but. Or that they want to train, quote unquote, the journalists themselves, but also because they have a plan, quote, a plan to invest $5 million toward covering the incoming President Donald J. Trump and his administration, unquote. Part of the reason for the restructuring, we are told, in addition to proving, quote unquote, to Trump's supposed base, that their voices will be heard in the leaner, meaner New York Times, is to support an ambitious goal, quoting here, that the Times laid out, self-created pressure, you will notice, in October 2015 to double its digital revenue to $800 million in 2020, unquote. The global guys need only place a little chump change on that button later down the road to declare the strategy a success and justify the cuts, no matter how painful to us, those staff who were cut and the readership denied even the slightest bit of scrutiny from within the bastion of propaganda itself. No chance will we have for even a whiff of what's really going on behind the curtain of fluff given us. Add these pieces together and you have a propaganda campaign and a fearful staff who are being put on notice that they are expendable, i.e., don't think too hard about what you're told to do here. Go along and you may survive in the leaner and less journalistic environment of the Times. And let's return now to Nikola Tesla, Man Out of Time by Margaret Cheney. Because of the inventor's impatience for delivery of his machinery, Westinghouse assigned a special person to expedite it. But the slowness with which Tesla was getting his money from Morgan forced the inventor to take on other work while awaiting the completion of Wardenclyffe. He moved his offices to New York's Metropolitan Tower for increased professional visibility. One of his schemes for raising money involved developing a special kind of induction motor built by Westinghouse, but there were continuing problems with it. He also installed Westinghouse equipment at the New York Edison plant. Meanwhile, George Scherf went exploring for business opportunities as far away as Mexico. A great disappointment to Tesla was the government's continuing failure to order his radio-controlled devices for coastal defense. When Congress passed a Coast Defense and Fortification Bill providing $7.5 million, he wrote Johnson that perhaps half a million would be invested in teleautomatons for your friend Nikola, and that the rest would undoubtedly find its way into the hands and pockets of the politicians. Even this note of cynicism betrayed unwarranted optimism. That's depressing, huh? So we're going to hear the sad end of this chapter next week and then begin chapter 16, Ridiculed, Condemned, and Combated, from Margaret Cheney's Tesla, man out of time.